Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Ah, can't you see it? A sparkling roadside EV quick charge power facility. It's chargers, control panels, and switchgear powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean. We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We're now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Here we go. Hour 3, G-Bag Nation on 105.3 The Fan. It's time now for the C-Note Cowboys news of the evening here on your home of the Cowboys, 105.3 The Fan. Have a detailed breakdown of Deion Sanders, the coach. And I want to know, if this sells you, maybe you've so far been anti-Deion. You know, we see in the text, we see on Twitter, a lot of people, you know, match that description. I'm not judging. I would just say, you know, suspend your thoughts right now and just, you know, listen to what we have here for you. Now, we're going to start with Troy Aikman, who went on his weekly radio show and discussed a number of Cowboys type of segments and discussions. And he said, I wouldn't bet against him. I would absolutely never bet against Deion Sanders. Okay, I would say if I was vetting a head coach, I would trust Troy Aikman to give me, a strong opinion, a well thought out answer. And, I would take it under heavy consideration, not just because he's an all-time Cowboy great, but, you know, he works in the NFL. I think he spends a considerable amount of time networking and thinking about this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
He's okay. So let me jump down to hear some of the meat of, he says, I think you'd relate exceptionally well in the locker room. It's amazing for someone who's as far removed from having played the game that the reverence these current players have for his career. It's pretty remarkable. It says a lot for him, so I think he'd be fantastic no matter where he is. You know, he said Cowboys or another team picks him up. So that's just from Deion, you know, or from Troy Aikman on Deion. Gets a big thumbs up, you know, and I would imagine that would hold weight. Like, if you have a very strong anti-Deion opinion, and, you know, it's understandable, especially in the sports media world. It is, what do you love, what do you hate? You know, strong opinions are the currency of the day, and it's fun to have as strong of an opinion as possible. But did you play with Deion? You know, do you know Deion? Do you go around the NFL talking to people about, you know, Colorado football or Jackson State football or the idea of Deion Sanders as a head coach with other decision makers, with other great players, people that are around the league more than you? You know, so I would just include that Troy Aikman piece in there, and I'd be curious, what you think of that idea. Okay, and then we go to the Twitter account of John Jacques Taylor, longtime sports reporter here, variety of roles, Morning News, ESPN Dallas.
Wrote a book about Deion Sanders. Yeah.
He tweets, you've heard so much about Deion the personality. Let me tell you a few things about Deion the coach. Old school CEO coach, gives his coordinators the authority to do what they want to do. Mm-hmm. I like that.
As long as you're identifying the right guys, of course, that is what you want.
Yeah, and he identified, Mike Zimmer. Yeah. I assume Zimmer would be on Deion's staff. Maybe I'm wrong about that, but I think that'd be a safe assumption after, Zim spent time with him at both of his collegiate stops. Deion's the ultimate culture changer because his personality is strong and his self-confidence is immense. Surrounds himself with coaches and staff who are loyal. His inner circle leaks nothing.
Yeah.
Okay, I don't care one way or the other about that. a stickler for punctuality. You want toughness. You want accountability, right? We don't want, like, I know, I think when it comes to Twitter or text, the words clown and circus are probably two of the most used descriptive terms by people that don't like the idea of Deion Sanders as a head coach. Stickler for punctuality.
Mm-hmm.
I like that. The team meeting starts when he arrives, and like former NFL coach Tom Coughlin, he often arrives 5 to 10 minutes early. If you're not seated when he arrives, you're late and kicked out of the meeting.
Yeah.
So you wouldn't get like a Zeke situation from this year?
No.
If that's how it's going to be.
You know, and I don't know how that would be reconciled between what Jerry Jones and what Deion, you know, wants, but at least this would be Sanders' approach to it. Detail-oriented, sees everything. Players wearing the wrong colored socks are kicked out of practice and told to change. He doesn't allow earrings or phones in the building.
Yeah,
in the building. Leave them in the car.
We're focusing on football here.
I don't know what earrings have to do with it, you know. But, you know, that is one of his things. He's an old school guy. Doesn't curse, but he is confrontational. Take it or leave those. I think you can be confrontational or unconfrontational, succeed as long as you're genuine and a good communicator.
Mm-hmm.
He lacks patience, so he moves on quickly once he's decided a coach can't handle a job. That leads to staff turnover and pressure to produce.
Yes.
Okay, so that's another kind of accountability. I think I like that, although you don't want to be turning it over too much.
He had three coaches. Like he had a defensive coordinator that left and took a job at Auburn. That, you know, it was a rough year. That first year that they had a lot of problems. His offensive coordinator left to take a job at San Diego State. It was a head coaching job, but he quit to go do that. And then he ended up getting – but, yeah, he doesn't have a lot of patience for that. Like I say, Pat Shurmur's done a really nice job of stepping in and giving him some stability with the offense.
Okay, he has an affinity for players who chase greatness through their training and practice habits, and he will teach them to maximize their potential. You know, I think all coaches like great players, but if you can especially relate to great players and help them reach their highest level, don't sell themselves short because of, you know, the fact that they're an 8 out of 10 already. Let's push to be the best possible version of yourself. Number 9, he prefers an offensive scheme that throws the ball, which is why he asked the late Mike Leach for OC recommendations at Jackson State. I like that.
Love it.
You do a lot worse than, you know, trying to implement some of the, you know, Mike Leach style of offense there with what you do. And then, you know, number 10, we've talked about it already. He's an effective communicator because he is straightforward. You know, we've talked a lot about what Deion can do for the digital brand, what he can do for the bottom line for Jerry Jones, and why we believe that might make him a candidate that stands out to Jerry Jones. Yesterday, the report from Ed Werder that Jerry is enamored with him. But I wanted to include a lot of those football things because I don't know if there's been a lot of reporting about that. But overall, after reading that post, again, from Jean-Jacques Taylor, you can find it yourself on Twitter, I found myself to be more optimistic about the idea of Deion in an NFL building, coaching, leading men, building a culture, finding the right scheme, finding the right coaches. That, you know, bumped him up a decent amount in my book. How about you guys?
I mean, I was pretty pumped when I first heard the story that they were actually talking to Deion. Now, he technically hasn't gotten an interview yet, but I mean, you take a team that was 1-11, you take them to 4-8, 9-4. You're competing for a conference championship game.
He should have had a winning record his first year. They gave away some games.
They did.
They absolutely gave away a couple of games.
And it was a bad team, and he got out all the bad eggs. I mean, you talk about some of the people he's going to bring over with him.
Yeah.
That also excites me.
Yeah.
I think that there's been way too much comfort for a long time in that building. And while, hey, I'm never going to be like, dude, you should lose your job, whatever, X, Y, Z. But I think change is exactly what this organization needs. And there might not be a candidate who's going to bring about more change than Deion Sanders. And I also think he is the type of personality that does understand Jerry and has a good enough relationship with him, but also is going to demand the respect and accountability from his players. It seems like everybody who's played for Deion for the most part and has been successful is praised Deion. I think Micah would be super pumped. I think CeeDee Lamb would be very excited. I would imagine they'd be excited at the idea of playing for a guy like Deion. Will it work? I don't know. We don't know if Ben Johnson's going to work. He might be an outstanding coordinator play caller, but fail as a head coach. It's all a gamble. we all kind of laughed when Dan Campbell was hired and he's biting off kneecaps. Like, I don't know if that's going to work. Now we're all kind of looking for our next Dan Campbell as head coach. So it's an inexact science here, but that dude and what he can bring when you've had 30 years of much of the same, maybe to shake some things up a little bit, that's needed. That's needed in a bad, bad way here.
Yeah, you know, I think getting a coach that can hold the players highly accountable, but at the same time command a ton of respect. It's easy to hold people accountable if you just want to be a Richard, you know. Mm-hmm. If you just want to be a total pain in their ass, anybody can pull that off, you know. But can you also connect with them and inspire them? And I think Deion could. 817, if Deion is a candidate, are the Cowboys going to possibly trade up to get his son? They are a package deal, right? Well, I think the important thing there is there's no way for it to be a package deal for Deion right now. You know, there's not a path to coaching his son that we can see unless it's with the Raiders, you know, but that's not, you know, right now. So if I'm Deion and I want to go to the NFL, there's a chance I could coach my son. Right. But I don't know who's going to end up taking him. If that all falls in place between now and a theoretical or a hypothetical offer to coach, I would imagine Deion would turn that down to go somewhere that he could coach his son. Whether that's, you know, I guess the only option right now would be Oakland or Las Vegas.
Yeah, that's the only one that would be with a head coach vacancy and some realm of possibility picking within the top 10 that you could conceivably make it happen for the quarterback there. But that's a lot of stuff that you don't know is going to happen until it happens. Because Deion becomes the head coach of the Raiders, you don't know what's going to happen with Shador necessarily, if that were the case. It seems like, given the options and there's not a direct path to coaching his son, the Cowboys would be the sort of the exception or the outlier of like, yeah, in general, yes, I would prefer to be coaching my son, but there's not a path to it, and the star means something.
I think the trade-up scenario would just be so unlikely because of Dak's contract. You know, I don't think you're going to give up additional draft assets to go get a quarterback that might be sitting on the bench and, you know, developing for the next 2 to 3 years. Maybe if a Patrick Mahomes situation developed where, for whatever reason, NFL teams are just not taking the guy, and now you're sitting there at 12 and he's still on the board, you know, that could happen. Or in an Archie Manning situation where Deion just says, I'm not going to let Shador play for anybody but the Cowboys. I think those would be the only two scenarios in which it would be a, you know, a package deal. But I think you'd have to get, you know, Deion to accept the job with a fair amount of ambiguity of where Shador is going. Okay, what else do we have here at 877-881-1053? The 785 says, I just flat out prefer Sanders. Yeah, and I can't blame you for that. I think it's a, you know, a very credible choice if you're just evaluating and think which coach would do the best job for the Cowboys. If you go to Deion, that's not a bit or a shtick at all. Maybe it would have been before he started his collegiate career. But at this point, he has at least checked the boxes of, I can lead men, I can lead a program, I can improve a football team and build a coaching staff. And I think one of the biggest things with guys going from college to the NFL is a lot of them never played in the NFL. They haven't been in an NFL building for any substantial amount of time with any, you know, real responsibility. Deion is, you know, not only a guy that knows how the NFL works in general, knows how the Cowboys work, obviously worked in NFL media for a long time as well. So I do think it's, you know, a little bit different.
Yeah, I think he would be the most qualified to sort of embrace the stuff that comes with Jerry and welcome that, the limelight, all that kind of stuff, being the headline news of everything every day in the sports world, and also being able to have enough respect from Jerry and everybody else to dictate a little bit more of the team culture. So I think he would be able to juggle those things better than probably anybody else.
Okay, I did not get a lot of text feedback on that. So hopefully those that, from at least from my perspective, maybe you have very good reason for doubting Deion Sanders because of what you've been able to, you know, experience in your own life. But I think a lot of that is just a really anti-Deion narrative, you know, that has run strong through the DFW media, I think, for a long time. And it has been a, you know, a bumpy ride at times. But I think a lot of people close the book on what they thought about Deion a long time ago. And whenever his name comes up, I think they fall back on previous, you know, beliefs without maybe taking in new information. Now, is Jean-Jacques Taylor great friends with Deion? Did he write a book about him? Is there a relationship? Probably. You know, but I think most people in the media right now are sending this coaching hire story through who's the person that if they get hired, I have a great source, right? You know, and if you know, if a media member is saying, wow, this would be a great coaching candidate, or wow, you know, this would be a really nice job, you know, I think a lot of times it's because they know I'm taking care of this person. And if they get me the gig, then the insider information is going to flow directly to me. So, I mean, that's part of the game. You know, and you have to decide for yourself how much credibility these. I mean, Jean-Jacques Taylor is a real journalist. You know what I'm saying?
He's been around here doing it for a long time.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thanks for that. Coming up next, time for Woolchuck's Top 10 at 420. Zachary, where are we going?
Yeah, I've got a top 10 that I don't know that I really want to do, but we're going to do it. Most memorable divisional round games of all time. 877-881-1053. What's your most memorable division?
So it's a new year, 2025, and you're thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How am I going to build something for myself? But where do I start? Shopify is how you're going to make it happen, and here's how. Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. The best time to start your new business is right now. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates, no coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to start selling with Shopify today. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
The search for truth never ends. Introducing June's Journey, a hidden object mobile game with a captivating story. Connect with friends, explore the roaring 20s, and enjoy thrilling activities and challenges while supporting environmental causes. After 7 years, the adventure continues with our immersive travels feature. Explore distant cultures and engage in exciting experiences. There's always something new to discover. Are you ready? Download June's Journey now on Android or iOS.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
Hey, football fans, it's Andrew Filippone, host of the First and Pod podcast. Join me and my co-host, three-time All-Pro Patrick Peterson, as we break down every game every week. New episodes drop on Monday and Friday mornings. Be sure to subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Round game.
Yeah, buddy, welcome back. It is the G-Back Nation on 105.3 The Fan. Segment's brought to you by Cars for Kids. Donate today, carsforkids.org. It's brought to you by the Frankels. Life's unpredictable. Accidents happen. If you or a loved one's injured in a car, truck, wreck, call the Frankels. Get a free consultation, 214 or 817-333-3333. Go to frankelfirm.com. We have top off-season questions for your Longhorns coming up at 440. Here's Woolchuck with your top 10 at 420. Zach with an H, the Woolly Bully.
All right, so today I went into it thinking, like, all right, this is perfect. Like, we got divisional round weekend. Duke top 10 best divisional round games of all time. I didn't realize what I was getting myself into when I did this, and I gotta highlight RJ Ochoa blogging the boys. When I asked this question on Twitter, he was like, dude, what is your problem? I'm like, what are you talking about? I'm sorry. He goes, this round haunts us. And then I saw the list that I'm going to use, and yeah, this is a really bad nightmare place to be as a Dallas Cowboys fan. There's tremendous other games, and I guess if you look at it from an outside viewer and you're not affiliated with the Cowboys anyway, these were awesome games too. But we just had our hearts ripped out and stomped on continuously over and 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 over again. So it's tough.
That many?
That many.
It was that many overs.
That many overs.
I saw you counting in your head. I was like, man, when's it going
to
stop?
Kind of like rack them. But we'll start in 1997. This is not Cowboys. Honorable mention, 877-881-1053. What do you think are the best divisional round playoff games of all time? And yeah, 2-4. We talked about the Byron Young story yesterday. Outstanding. Outstanding story. One thing we haven't hit just yet is our buddy Nick Harris reporting, and I talked to Nick about this. Totally accurate. DeMarco Murray or Tashard Choice could end up being on the Cowboys coaching staff as running backs coach. I think TC gets the first call.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe he wants to stay in Texas. He's an outstanding recruiter. Was amazing with North Texas as the running backs coach. Then went to Austin. He's been with the Horns for a while. DeMarco Murray's currently in Oklahoma. And I think there might be some friction on that coaching staff. So he's probably looking to get out of there as well. In either way, I'm sure one of them would take the job. I think DeMarco would 100% take the gig. We'll see what happens with the Chargers.
Spray tan back in town.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, honorable mention, we go to 1997. Jacksonville 30, Denver 27. This game did not seem like it was going to be a good one on paper. Jacksonville, second year in existence. They're 9-7. They sneak into the postseason. Heavy underdogs. 13-3, Denver Broncos juggernaut, right? John Elway, Super Bowl title. Let's go. Let's go win this bad boy. Well, what happened? Not so fast. Denver trying to make a late comeback in the fourth quarter. Elway hits Ed McCaffrey for a touchdown, brings it within three, but things didn't work out as Jacksonville would go on to win it. Broncos didn't get the onside kick, and you got the Jags who came up short to New England that year and what ended up being the Super Bowl of Brian Broaddus with the Packers defeating the said New England Patriots. So Jacksonville 30, Denver 27. 2002, you had the, I don't know how this isn't in the top 10, like could be number one, the Tuck Rule game, Patriots 16, Raiders 13, and maybe it is just the number 11, the honorable mention, because the overall game like wasn't awesome, but it's historic because of the Tuck Rule. It's snowing, it's disgusting, it's Foxborough Stadium, it's difficult to run the football. If you go back, though, a lot of legendary players in that football game on both sides, but the Tuck Rule's lived on forever. Referee Walt Coleman made the controversial call, and even to this day, I think forever, we'll probably be talking about the Tuck Rule. It's unbelievable. It's
Brady fumbled, right?
Yeah, Brady fumbled.
He definitely fumbled.
And this is why the NFL puts these games, these like snowy condition games, like the instead of putting like a game in Foxborough where it's going to be brutally cold, like at noon, you know, and try and get the game. No, they're hoping for exactly what happened. The drama,
yeah.
The snow, the whole, I mean, all that.
Core memory type stuff.
Yeah, it's like, you know, it's the Raiders are famous for this, though. The Raiders,
yeah.
You know, how many great games have been named after a Raider game? You know, the Tuck Rule, Holy Roller,
Immaculate Reception,
Ghost of the Post, Immaculate Reception. They this is what the NFL wants. They want like that bitterly cold, potential snow, maybe a little controversy in the game. That's why they. But that right there, man. You talk to Gruden about that game. He'll fight you. I mean, he will fight you about that.
Oh, I believe
about how that game went down.
I believe it.
Yeah.
All right, let's go to the Carolina Panthers and the St. Louis Rams. This game was incredible. Double overtime. I remember watching this one.
Rams and who?
Rams and Panthers. It was the year Carolina ended up going to the Super Bowl, and they lost to New England.
Oh,
Steve Smith.
Yeah.
Double overtime.
Huge play.
Takes the ball from Jake Delhomme over the middle. Quick slant. Splits the defense. Booms. Goes 40 yards for the game winner. It might. I think they kicked the game, a 40-yard field goal to force it to overtime, and then the game-winning touchdown was like 60 to 70 yards. But an incredible game. Greatest show on turf, Rams. Like, they're coming right off of, okay, we won the Super Bowl, we went to the Super Bowl, we lost to the Patriots.
I think their own kicker for the Rams missed a field goal that could have won them the game.
Jeff Wilkins misses a 53-yarder of his old, of his own. And 69, nice, was the Jack Delhomme to Steve Smith touchdown.
Old Jack.
Okay, how about this one? Steelers-Colts, 21-18. This is that idiot liquored up kicker, Mike Vanderjagt. Misses the 46-yarder with 17 seconds, cost the Colts the game. You also had the Jerome Bettis fumble.
And Ben Roethlisberger with one of the greatest open field tackles. He's like running, Nick Harper. Running one way and looking the other. Yep. Nick Harper.
He's weaving his way through. He returns it 42 yards, and somehow Ben Roethlisberger sticks his hand out.
He's falling down and reaches out and trips him. Oh, my gosh.
Barely tackles him, and then they missed the field goal to win the game. That was crazy, and that was during the stretch of the Colts couldn't do it. It was the Patriots were in their way, or something would happen. Next year they would win the Super Bowl. Steelers went on to win the Super Bowl that year. Bus's final ride in Detroit.
What a different story that is. If Jerome Bettis,
oh my gosh,
if that fumble ends up, he doesn't get to go back home to Detroit and win it. It's him actually fumbling it away for his team.
It would have been absolutely 2008. This game's disgusting. It was the Giants and Cowboys, 21-17. I'll never forget the 20-play, 10-minute drive the Cowboys went on right before the end of the half with Marion Barber scoring. And there's 47 seconds left on the clock. And it's just, all right, Amani Toomer, let me just pick on Jacques Reeves and Roy Williams. Boop, 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 down the field. Next thing you know, touchdown. Tied up. And second half, the Cowboys' offense looked completely dead. They pooped all over themselves. You had the big drop from Patrick Creighton in that one. A lot of plays that were left on the field. R.W. McQuarters gets the game-winning interception. Brandon Jacobs had the go-ahead one-yard touchdown run, then for whatever reason, slams the ball into the play clock. It was just weird. But I couldn't speak the rest of the night after that. When I was at that game, had tickets to go to the...
Oh, you were at that one?
I was at that one with my grandfather. And then we had tickets the next week because he had season tickets to go to the NFC Championship game.
You had him in hand.
Against Green Bay.
Yeah.
And they had beat the crap out of Green Bay earlier in the year at home. Yeah. So I'm thinking, this is amazing. I'm going to get to go watch the Cowboys go to the Super Bowl. And what happened? We're walking into Texas Stadium. Cowboy fans... We beat the crap out of them twice that year. By double-digit points. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's the Giants. We're going to roll over. This is going to be awesome.
Playoff Eli.
No, it didn't happen. Jets 28, Patriots 21. You remember this one? Can't wait. Bart Scott afterwards, as you had Santonio Holmes with the Jets icing the game. Sean Green was running all over
the place
against the Patriots. Mark Sanchez at quarterback. This was a big Rex Ryan victory as they went into New England and beat the Pats. Then you've got...
One of our favorites, LaDainian Tomlinson, was on that Jets team as well.
Yes, he was. Yeah. Yes, he was. Then you've got Ravens Broncos. This one went to double overtime, 38-35. The Jacoby Jones.
Oh my God!
Oh, ouchie. My goodness! The Hail Mary, the Flacco.
Because this is the Baltimore Jones. Super Bowl year, right?
It was. Yeah. It was. In Denver that year, Peyton Manning in 2013. I think that's the year he broke the passing touchdowns record.
He made Julius Thomas look like an all-time tight end.
Yes, it was unbelievable.
Eric Decker,
Demaryius Thomas. I think Wes Welker might have found his way onto that team. It was unbelievable what they were doing. We got the Patriots and Ravens, 35-31. Okay, this was Lee Evans, corner of the end zone.
Dropped it.
Catches it, yes, for Baltimore, and then had the ball ripped away.
Oh.
Shane Vereen had a big game in this one.
Shane Vereen,
for the Patriots. How about that as a name?
The guys they were getting it done with, man.
It's unreal. Cardinals-Packers. This was the Hail Mary final play.
Yeah.
Rodgers to Jeff Janis. Then in overtime,
I think it's Janus.
The room.
It's Hugh, isn't it?
Yeah,
first name.
Yeah. Hugh, that's his dad. Okay, Hugh Janus. You got the Fitzgerald connection on the next play. 5-yard touchdown wins the game. Carson Palmer. First ever postseason victory in that one.
That was Carson Palmer?
Carson Palmer.
It wasn't even Kurt Warner?
No, Carson Palmer got Arizona all the way to the AFC title game. That NFC title game, they lost to Carolina. So you're Carolina with Cam.
Oh, the Cam Newton year.
And then Denver won it finally.
Man, Carson Palmer was a good player when he was healthy.
He was. Green Bay, Dallas.
Which one?
This is the Mason Crosby one where you hit the game winner.
Third 19 or third 18?
Yeah, it was the Jared Cook 36-yarder. After I thought Jeff Heath just decapitated Aaron Rodgers, but somehow he held on to the football.
Orlando Scandrick was waiting for that ball to bounce right into his chest and go and finish that game.
I think it was the anniversary of this game yesterday because I ended up sitting through and watching the highlights of it again. I don't know why, but Dak was really brilliant. They dug themselves a big hole. But afterwards, I mean, the dude's running for first downs. Him and Dez were on fire that day together. Like, the whole narrative, him and Dez couldn't work. Just turn that game on. Don't listen to that. That's a bunch of baloney. Vikings. Saints, 29-24. You guys remember
the miracle?
Yeah, this was the miracle.
Stephon Diggs?
Dude, Stephon Diggs from Case Keenum, 10 seconds to go. Marcus Williams collides with the nearby corner, ends up knocking himself on the ground. Diggs ends up catching it, goes all the way for a touchdown, and then they go on to win. Unfortunately, the Vikings got absolutely obliterated by the Eagles in the NFC Championship game. But number one. Greatest divisional playoff game of all time. Chiefs-Bills. Back and forth. Oh. All day. Mahomes.
Allen.
Trading blows. Boom, boom, boom.
Bang.
Here's Gabe Davis. You want one touchdown? Okay. You want two touchdowns? All right. You want three touchdowns? Yeah, we'll give it to you. Four tutties on the day. Gabe Davis, 13 seconds to go. You're up 36-33. You're thinking we're finally doing it. We're going to the AFC title game. We've kicked Mahomes and Reed to the curb. Not so fast. Mahomes hits his guy Tyreek Hill, pits him at the Buffalo 31-yard line. Here comes Harrison Butker. Are the wives and the kids at home? You bet they are, Harrison. Game-tying field goal. Boom! Right through the uprights. You go to overtime. Josh Allen doesn't get to touch the ball. We change all the rules for him in the playoffs for this. You're not going to see that ever again. And Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs go on to win yet another Super Bowl. So there you have it. Some of the most memorable games. I know 81 Chargers Dolphins got texted in. They were like, Ryan, you got to know about that one.
Damn Fouts. Yeah, absolutely. That was Kellen Winslow and all that. But the Cowboy, the Hail Mary game didn't make this?
They didn't really go to anything prior to 97.
That was an anti-Cowboys bias.
1975, man.
Hall of Fame committee put this together?
No, this was, they just wanted to keep it within the last 20 years.
Did you get lazy? Are you doing this list?
No, this is the most recent list.
Oh, nice job, Woolchuck. I don't know why Brian's watchdogging your list like that.
I don't know. I'm just asking.
Of course he did. I mean, it's a football mail-in Friday.
There are a lot of times when we do these top 10s and we end up talking about the 60s and 70s. You love the list and everyone. I get crickets from everybody else in here.
I love the list when you do the, like,
I know you do.
But I would like, the Hail Mary game is like a famous divisional game.
It is a famous divisional game.
Yeah.
And it
top 10 famous though, right, Woolchuck?
We gave it some love now, didn't we?
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Woolchuck.
Let's get the Falcons and the
I would like to point
Buccaneers.
Out it's like almost 4:40 on a Friday, and we haven't mentioned one time that Eric Dickerson's the all-time rushing leader in the NFL.
You
and
just
I just
did.
Want to say, brought us be better.
Until Ashton Gentry breaks it next year.
Be better.
Okay, in addition to the finest is coming up at 5 o'clock.
We're going to the Super Bowl if he does.
Expressway at 520, but check it out. In about an hour from now, after What You Drinking, What You Thinking, it'll be the G-Bag of the Year inside LA Live. Okay, so let your friends know G-Bag of the Year is going to be crowned here in about an hour and 20 minutes or so. The best piece of audio from the sports world or otherwise coming up here in LA Live, which will be underway at 5:40. We have the five off-season questions that the Longhorns must get answered coming up next in the Nation. Here we go, Nation. Football's finest coming up at 5 o'clock. It's a proper Football Friday. We'll have Danny Cannell on with you at 6 o'clock talking about the national championship. What you drinking, what you thinking is coming up at 5:20. I want to talk some college football here with you as we have the five offseason questions for the Texas Longhorns. This is a Sean McFarland there in the morning news, and he asked the first question, is Arch Manning ready to take the reins? Quick refresher. 939 yards, 9 tutties, passing, 2 picks, 4 running touchdowns was his on his ledger this year. Obviously, he had the 2 starts, Louisiana Monroe and then Mississippi State. You know, and I guess my only concern here, guys, is if he's just a clear, surefire dude's about to take over and dominate, he should have been in for the Longhorns a lot more. I mean, he possibly should have started. The only reason I could think Sark wouldn't is maybe you don't want to create a quarterback controversy that could derail your season. But, you know, if the guy is clearly more talented and better than Ewers, you know, which isn't hard to do, you know, I wonder why stick with Quinn with all of his faults if Arch Manning is just like the heir apparent. Is he ready to take the reins? Obviously he is. But I think the bigger question, the more appropriate question is he going to dominate college football and carry a team like the great quarterbacks do, guys? What do you think about that?
And the big thing will be the offensive line. They've got a lot of talent there, but you've got, I believe, the right guard's the only one who's coming back that's been starting. So you're going to be breaking in a new center because Jake Majors has graduated. You're going to be, the rest of the left tackle, I think, got some playing time this past year because you had injuries to both your tackles. You played both left and right. But I think that they've done a good job of retooling the skill positions, so the talent around him should still be pretty good. You'll get C.J. Baxter back. So to me, I think as long as the offensive line just isn't completely atrocious, so it's like Arch doesn't have much to work with, I'm expecting a big-time year from Arch Manning, Heisman-esque.
You mentioned the O-line. That was the second question, and the morning news had a little bit of detail in there. DJ Campbell from Arlington Bowie and Cole Hudson from Frisco combined for nearly 1,200 snaps this season. They're going to be back. And Melissa's Trevor Gooseby, who saw time at both left and right tackle, got time against A&M and Georgia late in the year, too.
Yeah, Gooseby was the one when they had an injury at tackle, he was the guy that came in. I mean, whether it was the left tackle or the right tackle, and he played he played really well. Where they potentially could have some problems, and we'll see where Gooseby ends up playing, though. But they've got like redshirt sophomores behind him, but behind, you know, in their offensive line. So they go from a really experienced offensive line to one that's potentially going to have a young center, a young right tackle, and a right guard and a young right tackle as well. So they could have like three of their five guys could be guys that don't have much experience playing.
Okay, third question. Will underclassmen skill position players step up? You lose Golden, you lose Helm, you lose Isaiah Bond. They have Wingo, 472 yards and more, 465 yards and 7 touchdowns this year. Plus, I'm seeing on social media, French with 2 Fs.
Yeah.
This guy declared, and he's a 5-star guy as well. And, you know, I think receivers are more ready than they've ever been to step in and make a big impact in college. And the two guys they have already producing at a big level, I think when they get more targets, they're going to be just fine there, aren't they?
Yeah, and they got the sexy receiver, Khalid Lockett, who's a 5-star kid that is an absolute stud. So hopefully he's able to carry that over next year. And Austin, as a freshman, might be able to get some playing time. So, I mean, look, they've had the top recruiting class. Like, they're able to replenish
and reload
this thing. Yeah.
But you probably can expect a little bit of a step back from an offensive line standpoint.
Yeah, it's going to be tough to...
Just the general continuity of seniors like that. It's tough to... You got absolutely NFL guys on that offensive line. But I think it's definitely better that you have a more mobile quarterback now that you're dealing with.
They got... you mentioned the recruiting class. They have a 5-star safety. They have the 5-star wide receiver that you mentioned from Saxey. They have a 5-star defensive lineman, Justice Terry, 6'5", who decommitted from Georgia and SC. So I think the transfer portal is more important, but those freshmen can make an impact.
Freshmen can make an absolute impact, and you're right about the portal, where you get exposed a little bit on your depth when you have offense and defensive line problems is playing in the SEC.
Mm-hmm.
Because you do get these teams like, I know watching Tennessee play, just constant rotation. South Carolina, constant rotation. Ole Miss, constant rotation of defensive linemen. Man, if you're not good, and they're guys, like I say, the guys they have in the portal and the backup stuff, that's where you get exposed. And I think Wolchek's right about that. But, you know, we'll see. That Texas is a really well-coached bunch, you know, and they will figure things out. If they're playing with young guys, they're going to get a combination of some good guys on, you know, young guys on offense, defense. But there'll be some veteran guys that'll absolutely step up. That tight end I watched, you know, Gunnar Helm. Gunnar Helm was like a really like a non-factor. You know, and all of a sudden for the season, they're like, hey, you know, you need to kind of step up your game. What did he do? He stepped up his game. They got he made himself like a legitimately like a second round tight end.
Oh, I was wondering about that.
Being like a guy that probably was like, they were talking about maybe not even playing him. He went to for a guy that, you know, he starts the season, you can watch the Michigan game, and then go down through the season. And this kid played like one of the best tight ends in the country.
I mean, maybe it's just because he was on the field against college guys, but he seemed like big, strong, athletic in a way that could be a real problem even at the NFL level.
The helm,
tight end. Yeah.
What's his weakness? Well, have you seen?
He's a
250 guy. Yeah, have you watched
250.
Him? Yeah, he's a 250 guy. The thing about him is he's, you know who he is? He's Dalton Schultz. Yeah, that's
I
who
love
he
that
is.
I think he's a little faster, but I love that.
Well,
comp.
He's kind of a sneaky route runner, kind of navigates that.
He's got a real good feel for finding openings.
He finds openings. He can catch the ball, guys.
But the way he threw the gentleman down suggests more physicality, doesn't it?
He does not have as much physicality.
He doesn't have that physicality.
That was a highlight play.
I caught him
you caught him at the one play. Like, okay, he's blocking. They bring him in motion on the edge. And my man goes in there sideways, like he's like, it's kind of like, okay, here I go.
Yeah,
you know, and
not but, a lot of want to no, sometimes to engage,
and that's Dalton Schultz. Okay. I mean, but as far as catching the ball, the routes down the field, this kid's a second round player. Absolutely, he is in the mix with all these other tight ends that you're talking about.
Well, Chuck, you mentioned the transfer class ranked 79th in the country, 15th in the SEC. Is there a problem there with everybody being able to accumulate talent while you're going through the playoffs?
Yes.
Don't you need to be able to back channels or build your roster officially? Like Sarkisian said, we have champagne problems. You know, because they've been celebrating, their success and working for more, and the other teams have been building their teams.
They have I'll tell you what, though, if you're a transfer, you're looking at the roster like, where do I fit? You know, unless you can get the money or, you know, the guarantees. But I kind of look at their roster and think, wow, they got a lot of young people. Do I really want to show up and play here? Am I even going to get on the field?
I mean, to your point, they only got four players. One of them, North Carolina defensive lineman Travis Shaw.
Okay, I believe he is the one that has seven sacks? Lombardi was telling me about they lost a guy that's probably him some plays. He's a single digit, like a number five, number seven, something like that. But they were talking about that they lost a guy. This guy was evidently North Carolina lost a guy that was like had 6.5-7 sacks.
Yeah, it's probably.
I think this might be a run stuffing type of dude.
Okay,
I don't see any sacks for him.
Okay,
or many tackles.
Okay, well maybe this
330 pounds.
Okay,
weird is they dominated the portal last year, and they also made the semifinal. So like they pushed it back a week, but like Matthew Golden, they got as a transfer from Houston. Isaiah Bond, they got as a transfer from Alabama. Trey Moore is an edge rusher, I think, came from like UTSA. The safety from Clemson, Makuba. Mm-hmm. And I think they got another guy. Like a lot of their talent came from the portal, at least starters that they were able to fill needs with. So this year to not have that, I don't know. That might be a cop out to me using the complaint of the playoff.
All righty, it is the G-Back Nation here on 105.3 The Fan. Hope you're having a great football Friday. It's time now to get an edition of The Finest Chief. Where are you taking us?
Which teams are you rooting for this weekend? 877-881-1053. We also have your football joke of the day, and don't doubt, playoff Mahomes next in the nation.